You're listening to Polycast, an official podcast of Olden Civilization site.
Welcome to Polycast Special Edition on Alpha Centauri.
Project initiated. New data received.
Yes, indeed. Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri. And, of course, the expansion pack. Now, these games came out in 1999, so we're nearing the 10-year anniversary of these awesome games. And with us discussing the games, we have some experts here. We have Darznan.
Hello.
From the Alpha Centauri section of the Polyton site. And we have Hydro.
Howdy.
Long known for his Alpha Centauri fiction. And also as a phantom presence who may be making a cameo once or twice, we have the site's owner, Dan.
Greetings.
The first section will be discussing the game style, an overview of what it is, first impressions of Alpha Centauri, what it offers, and what it's really meant to us in the last 10 years. The second section will talk about gameplay. We'll talk about strategies, tips, multiplayer, and then we're going to get into Alpha Centauri fiction. And then for the fourth section, we have the game modding, and finally we'll have some concluding remarks. We'll be talking about thoughts on Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri 2. We hope it will happen. Who knows? Sid Meier always gets around and resurrects his old games. So, I guess we'll go with Darznan first on this one. Who are you, and why should anyone care about what you have to say on this topic? Why do you have authority to talk about Alpha Centauri?
Well, as far as my background in the game is concerned, I've generated around 40 play-by-email games for the various players within the community that we belong to. I've also generated over a dozen scenarios for the fans of the game. I co-authored with Ruben the guide for editing the Alphax text file, and then I also generated something for the CMNs, something called How to Generate Ghost Secret Projects, which was my guide for editing the faction.txt file.
Nice. And anyone who's ever messed with the FacEdit knows it's a really fun tool. We'll be talking more about that later. Now, Hydro, how about you?
Well, as you already mentioned, I've done quite a bit of fiction writing, and that kind of started by accident. But the result is that I became kind of deeply enmeshed at Apolliton, was thrilled with the shocking amount of feedback that I got, which of course only encouraged me to write more. And I found that, by and large, there are a fairly large number of extraordinary individuals that I've had the opportunity to meet through the years, and they've given me positive feedback, and I've been thrilled to give them feedback in return.
Okay. So what was that happy accident, by the way?
Well, the happy accident that got me involved was driving home from Michigan, and the entire drive home, I had a series of images on the good Chairman Yang interrogating a poor, hapless peacekeeper. And I was inspired to write all that down in a short story, and I finally got the guts to post it on Apolliton and immediately got some positive response. And after that, they just kind of continued to go, starting off with images based on the game or mechanics or some other element of it, which has kind of led me to basically delve into some of the wheres and the whys of the game and basically the back history and why it all matters.
Oh, really nice. By any chance, do you remember what your first story was called?
Yeah, that was called The Interview.
The Interview, okay.
And that was way back in 1999.
Okay, well, thanks. And I guess the last one to go is myself. So why should you listen to what Dark Cloud DC has to say on this? Well, I am the deity of lists here at Apolliton. One of the first places I posted on the site was the Alpha Centauri section. I really took to the fiction, participated in one of the first collaborative story efforts on Apolliton. It was the second, after the Spartan Chronicles, I did the Chiron Chronicle, which ran from August 2000 to February 2002, involved about 12 people, got a lot of people excited. If you want to know story of basically like the meta story of what happens with Alpha Centauri and Apolliton, I'm the right person to ask. And that's why I'm here.
Therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden. He drove out the man,
and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden, cherubim, and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. The Conclave Bible, Data Links.
Let's just throw this question up for the people who perhaps may not have played Alpha Centauri or perhaps have gotten a little rusty in their memory. I mean, it did come out in 1999. It's sort of an old game. So what was Alpha Centauri?
It's a sci-fi TBS 4X game, as far as that's concerned. I think that encapsulates it nicely. But essentially, it's a sci-fi game set on another planet where essentially you explore, expand, and try to survive.
And I'll just add that it is kind of in the same line as some of the other well-known turn-based games such as Master of Orion and the more recent Galciv and the Civilization series. And that's initially what led me to Alpha Centauri was the fact that it was done by the same gentleman who did Civilization and some of the other games that were of a similar ilk.
Now, discussing about the best things about Alpha Centauri, what made it important, unique, and what did you guys love about Alpha Centauri?
By far, the best thing about Alpha Centauri is how it integrated the characters into the storyline and into the gameplay. When you look at how the whole thing is put together, it's like a matrix, where what you do with your terraformers or your soldiers or building bases all goes back to the characters that represent the ideologies that are played in the game. And that, in many ways, is kind of the unique feature and the part that just, at least for me, acted as a huge stimulant to try to understand the game. And frankly, it made me care. In many games, you play and you learn the mechanics, you get bored and you move on. Well, that didn't happen with Alpha Centauri, and I'm still playing it after 8, 9+ years. So, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the characters really took on a life of their own in the game. As you read the planetary data links and the story became gradually revealed, you learned about Prokhor Zakharov and then all the planet dream stories that were coming. You got to read recurring characters came in the technology trees. Now, what Alpha Centauri did for space games was, in a way, I think it attempted to bring the space to the actual consumer, the usual person on the street. Because a game like Civilization 2, now, that game is accessible. People know history. There's the Civilopedia. You can look up technology trees. You can basically reinvent the conquest of the Roman Empire. You can do the Mongol conquests. You can do all these things. You actually care about it because you've learned about these things all your life. One of the pitfalls of space games is that there's space. It's the future. You don't really have a sort of grounding in it. You don't have an emotional grounding. What Alpha Centauri did, and which led to the massive amount of fan fiction for Alpha Centauri, was that it created a world like Mass Effect, if you played that game, a world like Serenity and Firefly, if you've seen the movies, which I believe brought space's mass appeal to the general person. And even in some degrees, you could argue, like Star Trek Voyager.
As far as that's concerned, I think it was very polarizing as far as the various factions, but it allowed you to play these various ideology-based factions differently. I think the role-playing was immense as far as that's concerned. When I was basically getting into it at that time there, playing, like you were saying, Prokhor Zakharov or the Believers or anything of that nature there, when you had the sound bites from the various technologies that you discovered and you start listening to them and you start getting immersed in it, and especially as far as how planet behaved, if you treated planet well, planet treated you well, or if you started to really rack in the minerals, why then planet rebelled against you and how to deal with that. I played games like Deadlock, yes, to a large extent, but they just didn't have the backstory that really grabbed you and held you as you rushed through the game and learned it and became more proficient at the game, such that you could beat the game. You could sit there and play these various polarized factions in a role-playing sense as well and try and push the limits of the game that way, which I found extremely enjoyable as the years have gone by. And like Hydra was saying earlier there, why, you know, here it is almost 9 years later and we're still playing the game.
And what I think is even better is that the community of Politan is still, after 9 years, it's extraordinary to still have a community that's still intact and, frankly, pretty darn vibrant, considering how old the game is. And there's only one reason for that, and that's because people play the game and they care about it, and they want to have continuing contact with other folks who are of a similar ilk. That really speaks to Brian Reynolds the kind of the originator of the game and to the ultimate vision of good old Sid Meier.
The sweaty arenas of Fort Legion, the glittering gambling halls of Morgan Bank, the sunny lovers' trysts in Gaia's High Garden, or the somber reading rooms of UN headquarters. Even the feeding bay at the Hive gives stark insight into the sleeping demons of Yang's communal utopia. Commissioner Pravin Lal, A Social History of Planet.
The worst things about Alpha Centauri. Personally, I did not like the dark color scheme. I had to turn the contrast way up to see it. The dark color scheme was a real turnoff for me. It was just difficult to see everything. I loved the technology trees. They reminded me of a lot of the technology trees that was used in Total Annihilation to very good effect. And they were even better because they were like civilization technology trees. But at sometimes, even with the planetary data links, I was a little bit confused about how things worked in the game. It was easy to play in one sense. You could always turn the difficulty down and beat the game, but it was one of those games that was sort of hard to master. There was so much there that it was overwhelming at times, and I think that's one of the things that made it difficult to sell, because I don't think it sold amazingly well. It sold well, but not amazingly well.
Definitely, as far as the fungus was concerned, that was pretty much a turnoff in that sense there. But if either of you had tried W. Gabris' alternate color patch, where it turns the fungus into a sort of a frothy gold,
oh, I can't say that I've ever heard of it.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah, that definitely helped out a lot. Now, as far as the difficulty of the game, I thought that was just something that pushed me harder trying to learn to beat the game in the various, playing the various factions. Was it difficult? Yeah. Until I got online, and then all of a sudden I read all the stuff that was available online, and it was like, wow, this is so easy now. But I think that's sort of that way with every game nowadays.
Yeah, the one item that ends up always kind of irritating me, although in a happy, good sort of way, was that after you've played the game for quite a while, of course, you kind of top out and you learn all the strategies, and which is why other alternatives and all the mods that have come out are, of course, invaluable to basically mix things up. A couple of my own little small pet peeves is kind of a technical issue, where if you pollute more, you have all sorts of bad things happen to you, but you're rewarded by being able to pollute more. I think someone forgot a minus sign on one of the algorithms. And also the AI, frankly, is pretty dated, and it is not the most intelligent AI in the whole world, and that's probably because the game's kind of complicated.
Every time I played against the computer, I've usually finished the game basically midway through the tech tree. I've never really gotten to the top of it. I usually dominate before, or they knock me out. Is that pretty common with everyone else?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, once you discover air power, essentially, the AI really falls apart. I think for anybody that's been online and has any play-by-email experience, why then, they've got enough understanding of the nuances of the game that they can pretty much kill the AI very quickly and efficiently. One of the things I always try to do is try to assist the AI, giving it more benefits, more air defense units, more AAA units that it can utilize effectively to try and at least slow down the human stampede against it once the human discovers Doc AP.
That's Doctrine Air Power. Basically, when you get airplanes and can use them to completely eradicate and hobble any action that the AI might be able to do, remove all of their defenders and simply steamroller them in a blitzkrieg. And the AI is pretty hopeless at combating or trying to find a defense against that. Then also some of the other items and being able to exploit your economy and minerals and just other things that the AI just isn't real well positioned for. Because frankly, we've had 8, 9 plus years to figure out how to beat the living snot out of the AI. You've got a group of basically very competitive analytical people on Apollo and other places, and they've pooled their knowledge and the poor AI doesn't stand a chance.
How did you find Alpha Centauri originally? Why did you guys originally buy it, and why did you enjoy it?
Well, it kind of goes back to playing Civ and Civ 1, and remembering I had a very good amount of fun playing those, I also had been exposed to Mu, and I've had a very long-standing love relationship with science fiction, as creepy as that sounds. It was a pretty natural thing to get involved in, and I remember having a laptop, spending a lot of time flying down to Texas on work, and the thing that just kind of kept me alive during those extremely unpleasant work periods flying all over the country was the fact I had my laptop and I was completely engrossed playing Alpha Centauri on the plane or in the terminals or when I was stationed somewhere in Texas. And I remember lots of people coming by, kind of looking what I was doing, and then a couple of gentlemen would say, "Ah, you're playing Alpha Centauri." And we'd have a knowing nod of inclusion between us, and then they'd move on with a big smile on their face. So it made me feel like a little bit less of a geek.
Now, myself, I sort of found it a little bit later than most people, I believe, if I can remember. I was on vacation visiting relatives, and I found it in sort of a Bennett Sam's Club. Now, I was just sort of rummaging around. I was like, well, I like the Civilization series, and this is it in space, and I love space. I also like science fiction. I don't consider it quite stigmatizing, though some of the comments I've heard have been, but I found it. I was just thinking, well, this looks really interesting. Now, with the Sam's Club discount, I'm definitely going to give this a try. So about $20 off, that convinced me to do it, and I am so happy I got it. The game gave me hours of enjoyment.
Well, from my end, I saw it, I think, the first week it came out, and I snapped it up immediately. I pulled open the cover, looked at it, and I said, wow, this is just me. And I think it was the first night I loaded it up. I played as the Spartans at first and took an alien artifact. I popped a pod, and it popped a worm, and the pop-up came up and said, it's probably not advisable to use an artifact to explore with. And then I lost the artifact. I said, I think you're right. From then on, I've been playing it pretty much nonstop.
I mean, the Gaians had some things going for them with the mind worms. It was always fun to do a little offbeat try with them. And the data angels and the cybernetic consciousness in the expansion pack, that was great. And then as the Nautilus pirates building ocean cities, nothing compares to that. I mean, Test of Time tried to do that with Civilization, but come on.
I'm a Gaian, tried and true. I remember going to the original Firaxis website before they closed it down and gutted the whole thing. And I took the little personality test that would help you figure out which one of the factions was more suited to your personality. And I pretty much landed squarely into the granola-munching, Birkstock-wearing Gaians. And, you know, they were dead on right. And ever since then, I've always considered Lady Deirdre Sky my personal best friend. I've certainly played most of the other factions. I can't say I care much for the Believers or some of the Blood Makes Grass Grow factions, but I've given most of them a chance. But by and large, Ms. Sky has my heart.
Yeah, I've always been a Gaian as well, but from the other stripe there, I've always been the extreme eco-terrorist, whatever it takes to purge planet of all the looters. So I've been waging echo warfare on whoever's been in my way for, 9 years now.
Oh, gotcha. And which faction can you guys not stand? Like, I can't take the Believers or the Spartans. I always go out of my way to assault both of those factions.
Yeah, the Believers just are kind of antithetical to my personal point of view. In fact, some of my fiction has portrayed them as basically marching up and down the streets crying "Onward, Christian Soldier." And that's actually kind of a frightening thought when you think about it. In the end, I've come to appreciate almost all the factions except the Believers. I've played with great enthusiasm the repressive Chairman Yang, which is not a whole lot of fun. But by and large, it's something that I can get a great appreciation of. And that's actually one of the big strengths of the game itself, is that because of the richness of the game and how the characters are integrated into the plot and how the game plays, you really can lose yourself, as both of you have mentioned, in both the characters and the game and just take on that persona for a little while.
We have a tall and particularly beautiful stand of white pine. It represents our promise to the people and to planet itself, never to repeat the tragedy of Earth. Lady Deirdre Sky, Planet Dreams.
What's more important, the data or the jazz? The data is ones and zeros. Life is the jazz. Data Tech Cinderos, Infobop. The tendency of biologicals to cling to their individual personalities can only be attributed to archaic evolutionary tendencies. Prime function, Akizeta 5. convergence.
The sea. The nations of planets send their trade across it without a thought. We can give the sea a little hand in teaching the landlubbers a lesson in humility. Captain Ulrich Stensgaard, the ripple and the wave.
The righteous need not cower before the drumbeat of human progress. Evil lurks in the data links, as it lurked in the streets of yesteryear. But it was never the streets that were evil. Sister Miriam Godwinson, The Blessed Struggle.
Superior training and superior weaponry have, when taken together, a geometric effect on overall military strength. Well-trained, well-equipped troops can stand up to many more times their lesser brethren. Spartan Battle Manual.
Learn to overcome the crass demands of flesh and bone. The goals of the group and the greater race are transcendent, and to embrace them is to achieve enlightenment. Chairman Shen Jiyang, SS on Mind and Matter.
Datapod recovered. Perhaps a careful review of your options is in order. Mission accomplished.
Now we're going to move on to section number 2 on gameplay. Darznan has some good strategies, tips, and multiplayer hints, maps that favor in assisting the AI.
Yeah, essentially I'm coming from the perspective of a CMM who's building a game for people. But yeah, in general, what you want to do as far as the game is concerned, like we were discussing before, the AI needs as much help as it can get. So the way that I try to set up the maps is something that assists the AI. One of the things it does is it always dribbles units at you, one or two at a time at most, typically. So the way that I always tried to build the maps was to build them in such a fashion that there were a lot of narrow isthmuses that I formed that sort of condensed the units down as they trickled across so that it gave the appearance that the AI was trying to give you a rush of troops, as it were, as opposed to what it typically does in a randomly generated map.
What do you mean by CMN generating game?
What is a CMN? CMN's the person that generates the play-by-emails and also the scenarios. I always called it chairman, personally.
Chairman. Okay. It's very important for people to learn how to be chairman of a game so that more games can be hosted.
Well, as far as if you want a balanced game to begin with, I know that when I started playing, we tried to just generate maps randomly without a chairman. One player would start next to like the Believers or the Hive or the Spartans, and they get steamrolled, they get upset, and they drop the game, and you'd be screwed because you didn't have the password for the game. Or another person would start out in such a superior position that the game would be over in 30, 40 turns because they'd be just off the chart as far as the power graph is concerned, and you'd still be trying to get to impact weapons, and they'd start flying jets over your head. So from a balanced perspective, having a chairman involved, ensure that everybody starts with a balanced position. That's extremely important, as well as the fact that you've got players involved that are at the same level, I think, to a large extent. Having people involved in a game where you've got somebody that's extremely experienced in the game playing against newbies, you know, I always kind of shied away from trying to build games for situations of that nature there because it wasn't going to be fun for everybody. The experienced player was going to either steamroll the other ones or just stop playing because it just wasn't fun anymore.
I'm on my 16th play-by-email game, and the instances where I usually have one person that I do almost all of them with, and the main problem I've had in the past when we tried to get other people involved is where they just drop. And all of a sudden, all this game that you've spent months and months and months working on, it's just dead and it's done. So that's why Darznan is completely right, where you need someone who's essentially functions as a moderator, not just to set up the game, but just to kind of be the holder of the passwords and whatnot, so you have a chance, for instance, cycling somebody else in if someone drops.
The sea is everything. It covers 7/10 of the globe. Its breath is pure and healthy. It is an immense desert where a man is never alone, for he can feel life quivering all about him. The sea is only a receptacle for all the prodigious, supernatural things that exist inside it. It is only movement and love. It is the living infinite. Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Data Links.
The next topic we had in here was upgrading the aquatic elements of the game. Grav ships for fungal tower, sea monoliths, those sort of things.
Essentially, when you're editing the AlphaXDeck text file, the default chassis for the fungal tower is an infantry unit. Well, one of the common things that happens in the game is that global warming occurs and huge amounts of flooding occur, and you drown all the fungal towers. Well, I was thinking, why does that have to happen? Why can't fungal towers exist in the shallows of these newly formed seas? So I just decided one day, well, why don't we try the grav ship chassis? And sure enough, it worked. Essentially, that stops the fungal tower from being drowned when global warming occurs or when a player tries to lower the elevation via the terraform down event. Now, you also have, as far as upgrading the aquatic elements there, sea monoliths. Now, this is something that the game will never place per se, but I think it adds to the game in the sense that, from my perspective, the game was neglected from the aquatic perspective from the beginning. So I've always been trying to enhance that one way or another. So by placing aquatic sea monoliths around the map, that then enhances the game from that perspective. I'm not going to say it forces the players to explore the sea, but I think it makes it more interesting for them because there's more things out there. And the sea monoliths do work on naval upgrades because it does promote the units when they do investigate the sea monoliths. Another interesting facet there is that if you park a transport on a sea monolith and it's next to a land square, if you board the infantry or rover-type units onto the sea transport, which is parked on the sea monolith, they'll get the option to upgrade as well, which is kind of neat, I always thought. Now, as far as the sea boreholes, I mean, the AI never uses boreholes or almost never does. So, I mean, it was just another wrinkle you throw in there trying to improve the aquatic elements of the game. The one thing I always thought was pretty neat was that you could sink the Unity wreckage and it would still be viable. You can still explore Unity wreckage, gain all the benefits, bonuses that are inherent from that wreckage. And the one thing I did was I replaced the mining laser with a sort of a Unity submersible, something that explored the seas of Chiron.
So what do you exactly do? Is it sort of the same process for sinking the Unity wreckage?
Yep.
Why would you do that?
Well, there again, I think you're trying to improve the aquatic elements of the game. Like I said, I think the aquatic elements were neglected from the beginning. Why, I'm not sure. I think it's just they put a lot of focus in different areas. This just wasn't one of them, per se. I've always tried to enhance that, because the sea, to a large extent, it's just a place that exists between point A and point B. You start out on one continent or island group, and you have to get to another island group or continent in order to stage an invasion. And you have to cross this big, vast sea in order to get there. But that whole sea is empty for the most part. After you've popped all the pods, there really isn't anything there unless you've got raging native life on. So by throwing these different elements into the game, it makes it more interesting. And if you throw something in there, something as important as sea monoliths or the sunken Unity wreckage onto there, that makes the players want to explore the map more in that sense.
So it's making the sea useful even to players who aren't the Nautilus pirates.
Right.
Utilizing the conditioned response of players as an advantage.
Yeah, I think one of the things I learned really early on, probably within the first couple of months of playing Smack, was that if I started next to Chairman Yang, my life was going to be miserable for the first 60 to 70 turns of the game, or at least until I discovered Doc AP. I think a lot of people, after playing the game for 6-7 months, I think that they are conditioned the same exact way, where the last person you want to see at the beginning of a game is Chairman Yang, or the believers, because they're just going to make your lives miserable, and you're going to be stunted as far as your progress is concerned, because you're going to be trying to crank out a defensive military strategy to either contain or launch a preemptive strike, as it were, to sort of stop them from attacking you. I think a lot of people probably get into that mindset after a while that this is the way you handle Yang, or this is the way you handle Miriam early in the game. And I think utilizing that conditioned response early in the game as a chairman by either placing them nearby or maybe just placing a few random units nearby that gives the inference that there's a large hive presence nearby, tricking the human players so that they're too busy responding to this possible non-threat, as it were, while the AIs are trying to coalesce and get themselves squared away and better entrenched wherever they are on the map.
You also mentioned that you wanted to have something for human players to fight over.
Yeah, that's another thing there. If you throw something out there that's extremely important, like the borehole cluster or the ruins or the manifold nexus, throw it about equidistant between two human players, why, both of them are going to sit there and try and claim it for themselves because it's just too important to ignore, and especially in the case of the ruins or the manifold nexus, you can't destroy it. It's still going to be there. So essentially, doing that, that there again allows the AIs to better establish themselves, better entrench themselves, allows them to get a higher tech level and be better able to withstand once the humans start gunning for them.
Hydro, by any chance, when you are confronted with such a situation that someone devious like Darzanin does when they design a map, what's your usual strategy for, say, getting the high ground, so to speak? Do you do the conditioned response, sort of manipulating the computer, or do you do something else?
No, what that does is it forces you as a player to stretch and go beyond what your typical game plan might be. I mean, I've played a couple of play-by-email games that were designed by the extraordinarily devious Googly, who has designed, a super usurper or a super faction, and all of a sudden you see something coming at you that is frankly way beyond what you would even consider having to deal with at, say, turn 60, and all of a sudden all of your glorious plans not only are thrown into complete chaos, but your typical strategies are completely useless, or worse, will result in you being a nice little snack food for the nasty usurper shortly thereafter. And so that, in my mind, is the main reason for trying to have essentially a building a scenario that forces the humans to react differently.
So let's move on to what to give the AI to start out a game with.
Yeah, one thing I noticed is if I gave it extra minerals for whatever reason, all it did was spam out more what amounted to essentially useless units at the beginning of the game, either lasers or impacts that were quickly outclassed in the near future or the not much farther down the tech tree line there. And it was crippled by the fact that it spammed out so many of these useless units that are then just roaming around the map, because that's one of the AI did. So minerals were not a good choice. Then I just looked into, as far as nutrients were concerned, I tried nutrients for a while, but essentially they ended up getting all these additional drones, even though the AIs are pretty good handling drones. Essentially they just ended up being the red icon there for the drones, and they really didn't contribute that much. What I found was that giving the AIs energy, that helped them out significantly, because it gave them a bonus as far as they had a reserve of ECs available to them that they could rush build units if they needed to, and it gave them an advance as far as techs were concerned. So that's typically what I did, was I would place cities on river sources and then put an energy source underneath those cities as well. It gave them a nice early bonus as far as moving up the tech tree a little bit further and giving them more ECs that they utilized for whatever reasons.
With regard to multiplayer, in a lot of the multiplayer games that I've been in, we actually have gone through the very end, because the purpose of the multiplayer wasn't necessarily a bloody-minded I win, you lose. It's more of an evolving story. That, in the end, is kind of what gets my interest going anyway. The way that the story unfolds, and especially when you're interacting with another person, it can even be even better, because, frankly, a human is much less predictable than the AI is. And that can make it even more exciting and, in the end, much more engrossing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of those things where it's potluck to a certain extent. Who you get in the games, for one thing, unless you pick the people you're going to play against, depends on who you end up with. Some of the games can be extremely enjoyable from players that you've never experienced before, whereas others can be not really your cup of tea, per se. I haven't played play-by-email in a long time, but I experienced quite a bit of that when I was into that sort of thing there, and I happened to run into an extremely great player and a great person overall, Trisha's Crusader, who probably one of the two or three best players that I've ever experienced playing against. and with, for that matter, there. Extremely nuanced in the game. Loved the diplomacy as far as that's concerned. Extremely adept at using your own words against you and taking an awful lot of time just showing people how to play the game. I remember when I was, I think it was CGN10 over at Civ Gaming, where he was actually going into all my bases because we were packed in. He was going into my bases and just making suggestions, because that's where I was at that time, as far as my knowledge level. He's making suggestions on how to improve my Gaian faction at that time there.
Yeah, and it's pretty rare to find somebody like that who basically goes out of their way to give and help you understand how to play the game and, frankly, how to enjoy it more and get more out of it.
Yep.
So we've had a couple of really extraordinary people of that sort. For instance, someone who comes to mind immediately is Velocirex, who's pretty much been a stalwart in terms of reaching out and having a helping hand and never having a mean thing to say about anybody. That's been my general observation with almost everybody on the Apolitan website.
Oh, well, then you obviously haven't ventured into the off-topic. Ha-ha.
Actually, no, I have to admit I've never spent any time there.
Well, you're probably a better person for it.
Yeah, take the moral high ground there, yep. Cody was the one that came up with the Codicil tool, which was a tool for the chairman where they could turn a human player, their faction, into an AI faction. I've utilized it a couple of times there. Extremely handy. Like we were discussing earlier, where player is obviously outclassed in a play by email, doesn't want to play it anymore, and nobody wants to pick up a game where there's obviously no chance of them winning whatsoever. What do you do? Does the game just die at that point there? Well, Cody came up with this tool where you can take that faction and just turn it into an AI faction. And it helped save several play-by-email games would have never progressed from there simply because nobody would have ever wanted to play those factions. The other thing that he was the one that discovered was that you can sit there and edit the faction.txt file to give the factions different attributes, in that those attributes are then imprinted onto a game file at formation of the game itself. The way that he presented it to me was a save, and I forget exactly what tech it was that the next turn it would discover. This had opened up a whole new vista as far as scenario generation for people such as Googly and myself, who generate a lot of scenarios where we could then manipulate these faction files to give a whole broad range of new attributes.
Chaos Theory, who sadly has passed from this world, I believe in 2006, perished of cancer, but he did a lot of contributions to scenario generation.
I bounced a lot of my ideas off him. I was totally blown away.
And I just remember he was also a real great contributor over on Smack Strategy, particularly in the early days when people were still trying to figure out all the nuances and all the sneaky tricks that one could do, and he was a pretty sharp guy overall.
I was bouncing ideas off of him in scenario generation. He was bouncing ideas off of me as we were progressing there, generating our own various SP challenges and SP games that we posted. And the one thing that I had just come up with was a way to present cheapened units, units that didn't cost as many minerals as the typical game calculated for them. And he showed me what he was doing at that time. He was actually farther along, had experimented and tested it further than me. I ended up publishing before him, but he was actually the one that came up with the concept of throwing cheapened units into the game, which was there again, helped the AI significantly.
You are orphans, Erzdeedre. Your homeworld already buried, so young among the Aeons. Yet, now you fill the skies where we watched a million sunsets with flame and contrails, paying no heed to the hard lessons the universe has tried to teach you. Are you a breath of life to invigorate a complacent world, you as humans, or an insidious cancer which must be excised?
Lady Deirdre Sky, Conversations with Planet.
Now, talking about Alpha Centauri fiction, Hydra already gave you some insight into how he got into writing fiction. Myself, probably get the idea of why I got into fiction, considering that my main interest in Alpha Centauri was the planetary data links and the major storyline. And I have to admit, it was pretty interesting when Michael Eli, the author of the Centauri Dawn trilogy, came to the forums in late 2000. Those were very exciting, very heady times. Using a little hyperbole here, but He came onto the forums was asking for people to suggest names for his newest book, some storyline suggestions. Admittedly, my opinion of the writing of that trilogy was that it was sort of spotty. But, I mean, it was Alpha Centauri. It was one of the first gaming literature. Other games such as Mass Effect and Halo now have their series, but Alpha Centauri was one of the first, if not the first, science fiction book series.
I absolutely read it, and in my overall opinion was the first book was pretty good, the second book was better, and the third was absolutely awful. I perhaps was a little bit too forward in expressing my opinion, and Mr. Ely was actually responded, and I felt kind of bad that I kind of rained on his parade. But in the end, I guess what I objected to in his third book was how I viewed the characters. They responded to this horrible situation they were in that occurred in the story in a completely, what I thought was, wrong manner. They all reacted in the opposite way of what everything that I'd read in the data links and in the game itself. Plus, I do agree with you, DC, that the writing itself was a little spotty. But overall, it 3 good volumes, and it was a substantial effort. I just think he was a bit rushed.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the situation. He had so much to look over in the writing document. I mean, the planetary data links were pages. I think someone compiled them. Were they about like 20 pages to 30 pages in a... Actually, no, there are more than that.
Well, they go on and on and on. They're currently in a text file, which you can look in if you care to, in the game files, and you can clip them, drop them into Word, and they're substantial. And that kind of gives a rich history that I've always found to be real interesting, and it's just a real excellent source of raw material for trying to understand the game, the world, and everything that goes with it. Certainly, Ely tried to touch on that, but his theme on the Spartans and ancient Greece, it just didn't seem to work all that well.
Everyone had their own view of how the factions should act, and in my opinion, Ely just didn't quite get it, but I admit I really, really enjoy the university, and so anytime anything was a little bit, say, on the sly there, I just sort of felt annoyed.
Like he was insulting you personally because the game is part of what you view as right and wrong? I know that's how I responded in a couple cases.
Yeah, I think that was part of the idea because there's this grand sort of, in a way, there's a theological struggle with the idea of exploiting planet versus protecting planet, development versus backwardness, all the sort of dichotomies that are set up in the series. It's just like a good novel. And then when you read it and you're playing the game, you're creating your own story for yourself. So then when different characters act in completely different ways from how you've been playing them, it's just in some ways really upsetting.
Yep. Agree overall. It was a good try and could have been done better.
Now, one that I sort of enjoyed, I only vaguely recollect some of it, but I loved Spartan Chronicles. I thought that that was one of probably the best Alpha Centauri fiction joint stories.
Started by Kenjiro, although Googly pretty much jumped and took leadership of that pretty early. That was a fairly large group of people who kind of a group fan fiction, which I spent a lot of time on, too. I think that and the Chiron Chronicles kind of stand out as the premier group fiction for Alpha Centauri.
Yeah, they were arranged very differently in how they reported. Kenshiro's Spartan Chronicles, which Hydra participated in addition, was sort of more your typical sort of never-ending story in a way. Everyone would post their own ideas. Whereas the Chiron Chronicle, as conceived by Lord LMP and myself, I think that Lord LMP changed her name to Melian, I believe, later. That one was sort of delivered in a newspaper style. Each of the factions would have news releases that would advance the story plot.
Yeah, they did have a very different flavor to them, but both useful in their own way. I mean, they both had very compelling storylines.
The people who were involved in the Spartan Chronicles was Kenjiro, Googly, Velocirix contributed a bit.
There were about a dozen and a half people who contributed, but probably about six or six plus that were responsible for the vast majority of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Yes. That went on between, I believe, July of 1999 until...
Probably. It was petering out by 2001.
Then I guess we'll move on to Alanestra Caviglia. She wrote Joe. It was one of the most famous stories on the forum. It ran from 2000 to 2002.
Well, it was extremely intricate, extraordinarily well written. The characters just popped off the page because of her extraordinary writing ability, and it was hive-based. So good old Chairman Yang and all of his minions and their machinations to try to exert dominance over a fractious planet. It's been a long time since I've read it. Probably should go back and refresh my memory.
Then I guess we'll move on to Velo Sirix, one of the few people here who actually has a published story in real life. Published two mysteries by either an independent house or self-published, but, I mean, they sold pretty well, he says. His Alpha Centauri things, I don't remember exactly what the story was called, but he wrote about like a 15-episode story that was detailing, I believe, Planet Mind's interactions.
Yeah, he was one of the first who really generated a long, coherent, essentially a mini-novel. And before then, I mean, certainly the stuff I've written has been more on the short story end, but he was the first essentially coherent author that posted on the site. And I think both Googly had some longer works, too. And it just kind of shows a different level of talent, which is good he was able to grace us with his presence for a while.
Then, of course, there was some amusing stories that was always printed on the site, like the Morgan Spy Tanning Lamps by Elemental. That one is a must-read. It's really short, but it's hilarious. But Santiago Claus, I think, takes the cake. It's by Vicdi, V-I-C-D-I. Does everyone remember that one? All the Spartan kids get for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's in the archives. It's another gem.
Yeah, it talks about all the presents that the children and all the factions get when Santiago Claus comes to bring them their presents. Apparently the Spartans get the best presents.
Well,
that's basically the underlying tone of the thing.
Of course.
Last few high points are The Wizard of Chiron by Raging Mouse. The guy who wrote it was Finnish, but he had better English than most Westerners do when he wrote that story. It was very ethereal. It really got into you.
I would have to agree. It was extraordinarily well written. One of those gentlemen who kind of graced us for a year or two, and then he just went away. And I guess that happens in life, and wish him well. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, that was a real loss to the fiction committee. Everyone kept trying to private message him and get him to write more, I recall. But oh, well, people move on. My stories began with some drivel, which is not worth reading. And I did the university story, which was my attempt at a sort of humorous long-term story. It wasn't the first piece of fiction I've ever written, but let's just say it wasn't the best piece of fiction I've ever written. What I'm most proud of is the Chiron Chronicle, which we mentioned earlier. There's about 12 people involved, from History Guy to Melian, Guardian, Argonaut, Cassiopeia, Lord LMP, Sprayber, Natan, Cyber, and a few others. It was mashup like after-action reports, AARs, mixed with stories. Started getting pretty crazy around February 2002, when it was basically abandoned, and most people who participated moved to Beyond Alpha Centauri, which ran from November 2001 to 2004. That moved it completely off the planet. It was run by Sprayber, History Guy, Lone Star, and some other changing faces. It was more ambitious, but less directly related to the game. It wasn't really my thing, but it lasted quite a while and was pretty popular.
In general, it just shows a lot of creativity, and people aren't boxing themselves into preconceived ideas. At that time, there was a lot going on in the fiction form. It's a little bit more quiet now, but by and large, you can really see all the different personalities that were adding in a very substantial way to kind of the growing body of work that ended up with the Alpha Centauri. And it was all kind of a labor of love, and everybody contributing as they could.
Now we'll move on to Hydro. I think you had about 36 published ones, and you seem to have taken on almost every faction with your stories. You've written on the Free Drones, you've written on the Gaians, you even wrote one that was sort of on the Starship Enterprise and Star Trek.
That one's eminently forgettable, so it's too bad you brought that one up. The three different flavors of stories that have been done, those pretty much go by kind of a short story, which by and large are, oh gosh, 4, 5, 6, 10 pages long. And they usually go through a single idea or maybe a scenario or kind of what I mentioned earlier, essentially talking about an image or a series of images or a situation. The second version is like the Spartan Chronicles, which were a multiplayer where it gets extraordinarily complex. You have a lot of people contributing, and they become extremely rich, and in many cases very confusing. And Spartan Chronicles essentially petered out, kind of like Chiron Chronicles, when it just got so complicated and no one really had a clue where the plot was after 300, 400, 500 pages of text. And it's just too bad, and we've tried to resuscitate it occasionally, but it never quite works. The third flavor that I am continuing to do to this day are the play-by-email texts, where pretty much find someone who's of a similar mind and wants to exchange kind of an after-action report that's directly related to what's going on in that individual turn. And you send that back and forth, and some of those have been posted over on Apolliton. And it's kind of cool because that way you can kind of get a flavor for exactly what you're doing and gives you more of a chance to contemplate what each individual turn can do for you.
Illuminatus did a really good job of setting up the archives. They're all clickable. It's topped in the forum for AC Fiction. It's called the Chiron Archives. AC General Help.
Which is good when you're considering that digging through 8-plus years of threads is a effort that you wouldn't want to wish on your worst enemy. And if you want to find anything, it's even worse.
Yeah.
So having someone who's actually done that to the strategy and the fiction basically means stuff can see the light of day again. Bell also published a Alpha Centauri strategy guide.
Oh, yeah.
Don't recall whether it's still in print or not, but it might be if people are so inclined to get it. Bell actually goes through and talks about each faction, what they can do, and has faction-specific information. The Prima strategy guide is simply repackaging the data links without any significant thought. Doesn't even really look like they had much time to play the game in terms of what they tell you you can do with the various bits of the game itself. It really isn't very helpful, except I use it essentially as an encyclopedia where I need a hard copy of what, say, an impact laser might be and where it is in the tech tree. Whereas you go through in Bell's strategy guide and he talks about exactly what does a green strategy mean. How do you optimize energy production as Morgan? How do you make the believers work? And that's the part that's really different. Of course, Bell had the advantage later on of all of the brains that had been working feverishly to try to figure out all the nuances of the game, but his real key there and where he just showed his brilliance was how he was able to distill all that into nice, clear prose with nice, discrete sentences such that you could understand the game, and reading 4 or 5 paragraphs, you could understand, well, how do you win using the pirates? Or how can you make sure you extol the virtues of the believers when you've got a major research penalty? And then he talks about the standard strategy, but he also talks about how you can use them in a different way, how you can play the believers as a builder, or how you can do them as a conqueror or a hybrid. And he talks about all different types of strategies with respect to each of the factions. That's the part that really is interesting. And then he weaves all that together with the technologies, and he talks about eras, and it basically is a better understand the game, how it works, and how you can get the most out of it. But he keeps the flavor of the game in terms of the factions, what they can do, and what they are really good at, and how to best minimize their liabilities.
Section 4, this is just on game modding.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Is this Maniac?
Yes.
Hey.
Hey,
oh,
welcome.
Oh, my gosh. First, let us talk about Network Node. Basically, this guy, he was a graphics design student, I believe, and he loved Alpha Centauri. In 2000, he set up this website. He had people do voice recordings, and then he would sort of modulate them and change them around so that he could use them for faction recordings. And he would also create graphics. He'd do a lot of mashups, a lot of stuff, sort of the similar things that you guys might see on YouTube nowadays when people make fake movies. He would go sort of mash all that up and then sort of turn it into an audio-visual amazingness. Did any of you guys download his factions?
I had a few on my old computer, but that the hard disk died, and I haven't been able to salvage them off as far as that's concerned. But I downloaded quite a few of them over the years. They were definitely different, that's for sure. Some of them were pretty good.
His site's gone now, but I believe that Maniac reposted them all on the Polyton directory where we can download the files. I believe he did about 15 different factions that way. They weren't, say, the best balanced in-game sort of faction, but it was definitely the coolest thing for Alpha Centauri, in my opinion. So I guess we're going to go discuss using FactEdit and scenarios. So, Darzin, you wanted to talk about the 80-20 bell curve for scenario format?
That's directly linked to should scenarios be designed for, and who are the ideal scenario players. And looking at the AC General Help section, the strategy section there at Poly, I'm looking at the people that have downloaded it, and I think I posted King of the Hill, what, over 2 years ago now, and I think it's been downloaded something like 60 times maybe. So it's an extremely small, unique audience. They're probably relatively experienced players, very good. Probably beat the AI, no problem. So what are you trying to build here? You're trying to build a scenario for these type of players. And essentially, linking that to the 80-20 bell curve, what I'm referring to here is that when you're going through a game setup, you've got a set of options that you can do in order to establish various games. You can generate a small planet, you can generate a huge planet, and everywhere in between. A little fungus, a lot of fungus, lots of native life, little native life, a lot of water, little water, all these various things that you can do. That makes up about 80% of the game, or about, in a bell curve, about 80% as far as that's concerned. And so linking these two thoughts together, as far as who I'm designing these for, as well as the 80-20 bell curve, my thought's always been that I try and include a lot of things that are outside of what you can typically get in a randomly generated game just by setting it up yourself. So I throw a lot of things in there, such as first comment here, as far as using the faction edit in order to change the attributes of the various factions that are in this game. So you take Miriam, and you take away her penalty as far as research is concerned, and you give her maybe an aquatic element or the amphibious ability so that she can invade quickly from transports. Essentially, what I do there is to take things that you can't get in a typical setup and then put them into the game to make the games more enjoyable for the players that do play them. So they're experiencing something new and something different every time that they download these games. Good examples of this would be throwing submarines in I think it's super strength, which is below doctrine air power, or giving the AIs units that they can utilize to combat the humans' use of air power capabilities. Things of that nature there. Or throwing psi gates out there so that, you know, just to see what the players do with them, per se. So something different, something new, something that these players that, they've probably experienced everything that they can randomly generate using just a typical game setup. So here I'm throwing something different into the mix, something that they weren't necessarily anticipating, but makes the game last a little bit longer, makes them want to open it up again, play with it a little bit more, that sort of thing there.
tip to everyone, of course, save early and save often when you're doing this scenario generation. There's nothing more annoying when you're trying to make a scenario than it crashes after you spent 2 hours getting everything just right and you have to redo it. I had so much trouble with Civilization II Fantastic Worlds when I tried to do them. Personally, I never really got into the scenario editing in Alpha Centauri. It seemed a little bit more difficult than editing for the Civilization II games. In your opinion, Darzanin, how difficult is it to edit in Alpha Centauri, and what are some tricks to make it easier if, say, someone was having some difficulty?
Well, essentially, Googly has posted something over at the Smack Academy, over at Civ Gaming, as far as using the scenario generator, and he goes in a step-by-step process there as far as actually generating a scenario. Extremely valuable. I don't think I would have ever taken on the task of learning the AC scenario generation if that hadn't been available. And I have to also say that at that time, I think I continually pestered Googly with questions left and right as far as, how do you do this? What happens if that happens? What the heck is going on here? That sort of thing. And he patiently walked me through how all these different aspects of the scenario generation work in unison in order to generate a viable and enjoyable scenario.
Very nice, very nice. Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri Scenario Generator versus the Civ 4 World Builder. Any comments on that?
The World Builder is so much easier to use as far as that's concerned. It is a little bit shallower as far as its capabilities. The one thing I liked about the SMAC Scenario Generator was that you could really tweak the AIs as far as what you wanted them to do. And I'm not necessarily seeing that level of depth in the World Builder. But all in all, the World Builder is just so much easier to use, and you don't have to worry about re-spinning the scenario simply because you want to add some more units to the game that you're building.
S-M-A-N-I-A-C, Smaniac. And I think that Hydra had a few comments on that, and Maniac definitely did.
I call it Smaniac, Smaniac. Smaniac is a mod I have been thinking about for years.
I've been playing almost all of the multiplayer games and, frankly, some of the single-player games for Alpha Centauri using the what was called the Smaniac mod, which is kind of a nice play on words for Smack and Maniac's tag. And what I have really appreciated about the mod itself is how it tries to address some of the specific AI limitations that we've seen in the game over the years. In other words, the terraforming leaves a lot to be desired. Some of the main issues with weapons that are overpowered that come too early. Parts of the tech tree that just frankly aren't very useful. And for that matter, even some of the overall strategies, like going green or being planet-friendly, which frankly have not been very viable. And I've just really come to appreciate how the mod has fundamentally changed the game and made some of these other ideas fully useful. And just kind of touching on some of the items that Darzanin mentioned, like for instance having AI terraformers that are only like one row of minerals as opposed to two, and having them have the AI having special abilities on their terraformers so they can really fundamentally compete with a human player who has all sorts of sneaky little tricks and minimax strategies that the AI just can't utilize. And all of that has really reinvigorated the game, at least for me, and frankly, in many ways, it's made it a new game.
Question for you, Maniac. How long did it take you to fully develop it, and what coding experience did you have to create this useful tool?
Actually, it was something I had been thinking about for years. I had been playing Smack a lot, and I had always been thinking, oh, that's so overpowered, I could change that. But, you know, they were all loose ideas, and they never came together. But then one summer, I just did it, and I actually did it pretty quickly, putting an entirely new tech tree together, and just putting together all the ideas that had been gathering in my head for many years. So actually went pretty quickly. Actually making the mods is actually very simple in Alpha Centauri. It's just a couple text files. So that was rather easy, much easier than Civ 4 in any case. time the desire for a grand format, which creates an awesome format for a civilization forum. It's based on the civilization fanatics forum, but then Q was so kind to give us upload space, so it's actually hosted on a file on a port.
How far along are you into the project?
We have got a working early game, and it's actually rather fun, I think. It's got basic facilities, resources, and all. So it's rather fun early game, but there still need to be some SDK coding. We've got a Unity workshop, but there's some bugs with it, so it's still not really functioning properly, but yeah, we're kind of on the good road.
The Unit Workshop was one of the really unique things about Alpha Centauri. You could design basically any sort of unit. It was almost limitless possibilities. So how did you end up coding that in?
The SDK coding is done by Alistair. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. He actually does all the SDK coding, and I all the XML. We wanted to stick with the single combat value of C4, so we scrapped armor, so units are now designed with their weapon that defines their strength, and then you can add all sorts of special abilities to it, right in smack. So, it's not working properly yet, but it's definitely going to be cool and kind of similar to smack, I think.
Okay, and about how many people are working on the project?
We were three actively. I was doing most of design and XML. Alistair was doing the SDK coding, and Ruben was doing graphics. Alistair of Alistair is taking a short break from end of fall, so on the SDK front, nothing is happening. At the moment, the future is kind of uncertain. So if I could make a call to any SDKs listening to this, join the project.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY. You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at polycast@polson.net. For more information on Polycast, our sibling show Modcast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at polycast.apolton.net.
Although planets' native life is based, like Earth's, on right-handed DNA and codes for all the same amino acids, the inevitable chemical and structural differences from a billion years of evolution in an alien environment render the native plant life highly poisonous to humans. Juicy ripe grapefruits may look appealing, but a mouthful of organonitrates will certainly change your mind in a hurry. Lady Deirdre Skye, The Comparative Biology of Planet.
So we're going to move on to concluding remarks right now, and basically, anyone have any thoughts about Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri 2, what can be improved, what you'd like to see, possibilities of it?
What I've read on the web before, when Civ 4 was in development, Soren Johnson gave a speech where he essentially said what they were going to do with Civ 4 was take 30% of the old, take 30% improved, and add 30% new, in a nutshell. I was thinking just if they were to do the same thing for Smack 2, how good would that be? What elements would you take unchanged, essentially, and what elements would you improve upon, and what else would you add to the game? Would it still be just as great a game as Smack was when it first came out?
If I were to say my wishes for Smack 2, I'd say that it should use the same story, and the core story is the seven factions landing on an alien planet, and there they gradually discover the planet is actually kind of sentient, growing to sentience. The rest I find actually not so very important, and I think they could actually change that, because we have learned it is actually rather imbalanced with the crawlers, choppers, so I wouldn't mind if they changed that all. And, specific tech names, you could include all kinds of references to the old names, but I wouldn't mind if they switched it all around and create something completely new. In that, I'm actually more radical than most, because I learned there are many people who would actually like it to be more conservative. And yeah, that's probably not realistic. Firaxis would do, and another switch would probably also be a rather different original one, I think.
I would agree with you, Maniac, about how the storyline is really solid, and it's something very special. And if they're going to redo it, what I'd suggest is basically for Firaxis to incorporate a lot of the changes, such as the color patch that was already mentioned, to get the contrast up so it's easier to see, to probably work a bit with the tech tree to make it a little bit less intimidating, to make more of the units and the technologies and the buildings more useful to actually employ, maybe actually pare down some of the fiction to make it a little bit more readable at times, because people today have lesser attention spans, and to bring others in, you can still make something good with short writing. I guess other than that, I don't really see too much that can be improved. I just really think it's a very solid game. I mean, they'd probably make it 3D. I don't like 3D, but there might be something to be said for trying that.
Well, my main concern is kind of echoes what's already been said, in that the main item that's kept me involved and interested over the years is the storyline, and the storyline and how it interweaves itself with the way the game plays. If they're able to maintain that and keep it interesting and not make it so linear like some of the other games have done, then that's a good thing. What I would be very afraid of, and this might be the conservative part that Maniac mentioned, is that if you try to make it much more straightforward, you run the risk of making the characters two-dimensional or just outright caricatures, which you can easily dismiss. And that's one of the weaknesses that I see in Civ 4, just to mention it briefly, is that all the leaders are interchangeable to me. I mean, I don't give a hoot whether it's Darius or Cyrus or anybody else. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're simply statistics. And that's not the case in Alpha Centauri, where the characters do play differently, and you certainly do have enough of depth within them in terms of how the game is structured and some of the background and the technology trees that makes you have essentially what I consider an emotional stake in them. Now, that's a very fine balance.
In Civ 4, there are lots of civilizations and lots of leaders. In Alpha Centauri, you only have 7 factions and 7 leaders if you don't count Crossfire. So it's much easier to make them all very distinct. So personally, I'm not very worried that the factions would all be very bland. I think if they made the smack do, I think that they could succeed in making them rather distinct.
There's a lot of ways you can really interpret the faction leaders. I mean, we've done a lot of ragging on Miriam, and I've done a little bit on Santiago, but as I believe that Hydro demonstrated in his story, there are some redeemable qualities in the believers, and there are definitely, with the Spartans, Santiago can be seen in a reasonable light. I mean, I wouldn't call her necessarily a good character, but you could definitely call her reasonable in having a good plan for dealing with planets.
I love her. I'm a big fan of Spartans, but that's because we played them in Alpha Centauri Democracy games, so you kind of grow fond of them.
Even the good factions, quote-unquote, have been shown to have some negative aspects. I believe the Peacekeepers, for example, were portrayed as pretty bad in a few fiction works and a few demonstrations.
They're kind of the candy of snacks. They nuke you whenever they get a chance. One exception is kind of the Gynes. Those are kind of the really good guys, because Vinerals kind of designed them as the true story towards the Semnus. So those are kind of hard to picture badly.
Well, the Gynes can certainly be considered more of what Darsin said, essentially extremely rigid eco-terrorists, where they're so completely fixed on their own dogma of planet and being nice to planet that they forget about the human element. And if you can play that up, and that has been played up in some of the fiction and some of the ways they've been characterized as basically eco-loonies, that certainly can be one way that they can be considered negative.
Yeah, I always saw them as that. But, of course, when the cult of planet comes on, then even the Gynes are considered sort of not scary.
No, they're not considered militaristic, but they certainly will rip your brains out with their mind worms. So is that really any better than Santiago killing you with an impact rifle?
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually the university, so we usually butt heads a lot with the Gynes.
Yeah, well, you deserve it.
We have better invention. You can't even fathom what the university has up its sleeve.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
We will bury you.
That's what Khrushchev said, and he's in the dustbin of history, buddy boy.
Hey, well, they are based on the Russians.
The question that I have to everyone here, and we ask this of first-time guest co-hosts, have you listened to Polycast in the past?
after you had contacted me about doing this sort of thing, why then I downloaded one just to see what it was about. So I listened to that one. I forget exactly which one it was. But other than that, I have not listened to it.
I have actually listened to several episodes. Yes, I'm the best. I think the first one was somewhere around episode 20 when you had an interview with Tripp about Beyond the Sword. Since I was a beta tester, I of course had to listen to that. Then there were a couple others with Fall from Heaven. Yeah, after that, I always looked at the content of the episode, and sometimes I've downloaded, I don't know, 5 or 8 or something in between. I listened to those. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I've heard a few of the ones in the episode 30s, I believe. My favorite one, of course, is the Girls Playing Civ special. That was definitely a very exciting one to listen to. My favorite part of that was on naming cities, because particularly in Alva Centauri, not so much in the other games, I love naming the cities interesting names. Can't think of any ones I'm doing right now, but I always tried to think of good sci-fi names, sort of storyline names that would fit with, say, the University, the Peacekeepers, or the Morganites. And the names the game had by default, though, some of those were amazing.
I've been just pretty darn happy with the Alpha Centauri game in general. Strange as it sounds, it's actually given me back more than what I ever would have thought back in 1999 when I first bought the game. And frankly, what kind of has kept it all together is Apollotan. I'll kind of throw a softball over to Dan. It has done a nice job of bringing together a group of people who are like-minded, who otherwise would probably never, ever meet each other, and may never meet each other in person, but certainly allows them the ability to exchange thoughts and ideas, and frankly, has done a lot to make the game a richer and more interesting place to be. And also contribute as you might be able to, if nothing else than just to say howdy to someone that you've known for 8, 9, coming up on 10 years.
Yeah, well, definitely appreciate it, Dan.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Even though I don't think Maniac has thanked me for a Polton yet, I know he's thinking it.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm smiling broadly the whole time here, so...
You do realize this isn't a visual medium, right?
Yeah, I know. With Electronic Arts shortly taking over Take-Two, no doubt. I think it's almost certain that there will be an Alpha Centauri 2 in the future. So I'd say everyone keep up the hope for another smack. I think it'll certainly be there in 2 or 3 years or something, I think.
It'd be pretty awesome if we had another smack come out here. Other than that, we really can't add anything else.
I would just like to thank everyone who has attended this. Thank you, Hydro. Thank you, Darsnan. And thank you, Maniac, for sticking with all the technical difficulties. And finally, a big thanks goes out to Dan Quick, who donated 3 hours of his time, as he always donates a lot of his time to this project of Apollyon Civilization site. It's, we love the site. We love what you've done with it. And thank you, all you listeners, for tuning in to this special edition of a Apollycast, tuning in to the Sid Meier's Alpha Centauri special reminiscences, where you can learn almost anything you want about the greatest, arguably, space-based civilization game. Thank you.
Bye, all.
Hey, take care.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, see ya.
This has been Dark Cloud, signing out. Oh, really nice. By any chance, do you remember what your first story was called?
Yeah, that was called, the... Oh, shoot. Now I'm actually,
In the sense that the game was in the click on.
In my opinion, the premier strategy guide.
Now that you know how often people talk over each other, you can really appreciate the editing work that Dan does on these things.
That's true.
Likely more work than any of us can possibly imagine.
Well, that's probably why your quality's been so high. You haven't been posting those ones, right?
Yeah, that's... whatever you say. That was a... Hold on, phone's ringing.
Okay.
That one was a throwaway, to be sure.
Okay, it's really stupid.
Okay, we're all done.
Yes, indeed, you're all done. I'm here. I found a button here, mic on.
Oh.
Was set on mic off.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, that was sort of odd. It dropped out mid-speech.
Oh, good. I was monologuing, and I got cut off, huh?
Yeah, that was sort of weird.
Oh, well.
This will be good for the outtakes.
Project complete.
Record date March 20th, 2008.
New orders needed.
Sound clips copyright Alpha Centauri and the Alien Crossfire Expansion Pack.
Are you certain you want to do this? Request confirmation. Please don't go. The drones need you. They look up to you.
Copyright 2008, Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.